Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from beautiful Southern California, where the rain has stopped and the sun is out. It's a breeze. It would feel like early fall for most of you. For us, we call this winter. Winter. Oh, we got a lot to talk about. Got a lot to talk about. In 15 minutes, I will iterate and reiterate. Some people only reiterate. I iterate things and I will reiterate. The real reason Ohio State and LSU so desperately want to be ranked number one. Niners appear to be real, huh? Rams not dead yet. There you go, Ramos. Chargers are doing what the Chargers do. Really out of the playoff contention now. Playing awesome football. Hey-o! It's Charger football. The Browns won. Eh. And then Baker Mayfield did what Baker Mayfield always does. Interjected his own opinion about something he doesn't have to interject his own opinion about. The Browns are going to brown. But I'm super into the Patriots, who lost and did not get the benefit of officiating. Right? Now, you can tell me, oh, they had to run a trick play, and they blocked another punt. Okay, they did, but the Patriots, despite being outclassed in terms of offensive weaponry, were right there with a chance to tie or win the game, right? Like, my own spidey sense is that Tom Brady could have thrown to Jacoby Myers, who was open for a split second, but Jacoby Myers has hands like, what's the guy, Stone Hands from Necessary Roughness? Don't throw it to Stone Hands! So instead, he throws it to always reliable Julian Edelman, who was for a split second open, but what he should have done, which you should have done, man, was just stop. If he just stops, defender runs him over, almost posting up. You get the call. You get a first down with like a couple inches to spare, right? But I want to criticize Bill Belichick for not giving Tom Brady the weaponry. I want to sit here and go like, hey, even though he's done an amazing job with no defensive coordinator, reworking this team, reformulating this team, you know what I'm left with? I'm left with nothing but an incredible amount of respect from this perspective. They're going to have another shot to win it. They might have to go on the road to Baltimore to do it. And yeah, Tom Brady doesn't appear to have enough weapons at this point to pull it off. On the other hand, it also tells you just how hard it is to both win and do things the right way. Like, man, if they only had, I don't know, somebody like a Josh Gordon, they had him. They had to cut him. If they only had an Antonio Brown, they had him. They had to cut him. I know they trade away Josh Gordon, whatever, but it's essentially they got rid of him, right? And they never replaced Rob Gronkowski. Do you know how hard it is? That's I think, what today is about. Today is about, I'm not sure if people understand just how difficult it is. Antonio Brown was a complete pain in the ass. He literally had a story about him on some level every day he was a member of the Patriots. He was only there for like 2 weeks. And there was a new story about knucklehead Antonio Brown. And you know what? He'd still probably be on the team if it wasn't for the owner getting caught in a massage parlor in the off last season, right? In the off-season story. And Josh Gordon, like, look, they only got Josh Gordon because of the litany of issues that had followed Josh Gordon. But it was one of those, we got to get, if he starts missing meetings, we can't have zero tolerance with Josh Gordon and then not have a zero tolerance with Josh Gordon just because we got to have a wide receiver. And we can be fairly critical of trying to replace Rob Gronkowski. But one, it wasn't like Gronk told them a long time ago, hey, I'm out after this date. You better find a way to replace me. And two, everybody's looking for the next Rob Gronkowski. Duh. It's really hard. Well, you know, why didn't you, you know, N'Keal Harry, one, he hasn't been healthy. Two, like, look, he's got a big body. But it's not like the Arizona State Sun Devils don't have a staff made up of former NFL guys who can go, hey, this guy, he's a pro. But either one, it takes a lot of time. Two, that offense is hard to learn. Three, he hadn't been healthy enough to even get the game reps out there anyway. There's an expression in basketball, and I think it works very, very well in football. It works in every sport. Winning is hard. Losing sucks. Winning is really, really hard. It just is. You know? Because you can do all the right things as an organization and put all the right resources into it. Invest all your scouts. Find me the best NFL talent wide receiver at the end of the first round. N'Keal Harry, not healthy and struggling to pick up what Tom Brady wants him to do. Very normal for rookie wide receivers. And if you go back over the past 2 years, like, dude, it's been a turnstile. They have, and you know what? Honestly, they missed on Emmanuel Sanders. Should have traded for Emmanuel Sanders. Instead, Mohamed Sanu, and Mohamed Sanu is over the hill. It ain't like they haven't tried. It's just hard. Everyone is actually trying to accomplish the same goal. Maybe here's the best way of putting it. We do this all the time with Nick Saban. We do it with Bill Belichick, right? Where we go like, you know, you give Bill Belichick a week to prepare, 2 weeks to prepare. He's unbelievable. Well, yeah, but it's not like the other guy's not trying. It's not like any of these coaches, you know, like Andy Reid's going there, go, wait, they got Belichick and he's going to prepare for us? We're done. If 32 teams, and by now 32 teams, you may think they're not trying to, they're all trying to win. But even if it's 25 teams are trying to win or 27 teams are trying to win or whatever, I want to sit here and tell you that Belichick is having a great year. The makeup of the roster, not having a true defensive coordinator, working with his son and not having infighting about it. I want to tell you that he has had a bad season as GM, but has he? Yeah, they. It looks like they missed on Mohamed Sanu. The Niners got Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth-round pick for a third and a fourth. Should add him instead of the second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu. You do that, probably win a couple of these games. It's that simple. The margin is that close. But I want you to ask yourself this: when they did the Sanu trade, did you think it was smart? I did. Why? Because Mohamed Sanu is brilliant, super bright guy. Got to be a really bright guy to survive in New England. You know, guy who's a former kind of quarterback guy as well, has that thinking brain. They misevaluated where he was in his career. And though Edelman's 34 and still able to navigate the league without, you know, breakaway speed, Sanu doesn't appear to be that guy. Can't get open. I defended him about Malcolm Butler because he did the right thing then. I'll defend him now with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown because it's the right thing that you have to do. But I don't think people understand how hard it is to get rid of guys for the right reason when it hurts you in production. And with all of that said, there's still a missed call away or a fourth down completion away from tying and potentially beating the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to sit here and tell you it's over, it's a wrap. But either the Ravens or the Chiefs, or maybe the Ravens and the Chiefs, stand in their way of getting to a Super Bowl. And though we want to sit here and look at the final score of the Ravens game and say they can't beat them, if you watch that game, if Edelman doesn't fumble, they come back and take the lead. If you watched yesterday's game, you could think, yes, Kansas City was completely and thoroughly dominant, and the Patriots still had a chance late. I am not putting dirt on that grave, and I am telling you that it's this close. And while they're not as good offensively as either of those top two teams, it's not for lack of trying, and it's not for making poor decisions, with the exception of the Sanu deal.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Now, as for the Niners, remember when we said we got to see something from Jimmy G? Right? The defense carries them. The run game carries them. We got to see something from Jimmy G. For most teams, it's about what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens did yesterday. Can you play well when you're not playing well? Can you win ugly, if you will? But to get down on the road several times and to keep coming back, 26 for 35, four touchdowns. I mean, it's been incredibly impressive. Hitting Emmanuel Sanders seven times and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Raheem Mostert. Man, I feel like we went from the Niners being a team where, you know, they're really talented and they're really young and they're going to be good, but they played a soft schedule and it's hard to figure out just how good they are. The last 3 weeks, Packers at home, at the Ravens, at the Saints, they win two out of three and they were right there to beat the Ravens. And the way in which they beat the Saints in a shootout and Jimmy G kind of coming into his own, I can't think of a better way to cap off the two-game road trip. They got Falcons. They got Rams. I don't know if they'll even have to play all their guys when they take on the Seahawks at the end of the season. Yes, the Rams appear to be some level of back and a high level of competitive, and their defense was phenomenal yesterday against Russell Wilson. But Green Bay, New Orleans, both have three losses, and they both have losses head-to-head with the San Francisco 49ers. Niners are they're two wins away from it being a wrap, one win away from it probably being a wrap. But more important than home field advantage is that Jimmy G came into his own yesterday. And where the defense didn't play well, the offense did. Can you play well when you're not playing well, or can you play well offensively when your defense isn't playing well? Let's get to This is Kyle Shanahan, by the way, doing what smart people do. Smart people learn from their own mistakes. And I told you guys this a couple of weeks ago, and I tweeted this, and I've had a couple of NFL assistants reach out to me and go, you know what, that's really, really, that was a smart thing. And it's this, Kyle Shanahan should have a Super Bowl credit to his name. He should have Kyle Shanahan, offensive coordinator, Super Bowl champion, Atlanta Falcons. But I'm not sure he'd be nearly as good today if he hadn't lost that Super Bowl in the way in which they lost the Super Bowl. What did they, if they weren't playing great offense early in the year statistically, if they weren't focusing on Jimmy Garoppolo and letting him throw it all over the yard early in the season, why was that? Because he knows that in order to win in January and win in February, you got to be able to commit to running the football. It's what they didn't do with the Falcons. They're up 28-3. They simply run the football, commit to running it, kick a field goal when you can, but just not get behind the chains. You win the game, you win the Super Bowl. Who cares about style points? And that's why Jimmy G just looked like a guy early in the year. Because they want to establish that they can run it when everyone knows they're going to run it. Run it, play defense. Run it, play defense. And now, obviously, when they had to open it up, and when we had to see what they got under the hood, Jimmy G's got a little bit more than we might have thought.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Lipscomb Academy, you can follow them on Twitter at LA Mustang FB, only high school football team in the country with a full-time nutritionist, academic coach, NFL strength coach, and the best high school weight room in the country, plus a barber shop and a 3,000 square foot concert venue. That's how they got Trent Dilfer. He's joined, cool enough to join us on the Doug Gottlieb Show, former Super Bowl champion quarterback, longtime NFL analyst. Let me start with that Patriots game. Fourth and three, Brady tries to throw the ball to Julian Edelman instead of Jacoby Myers, who appeared to be open for the first down. Did Tom Brady make the right decision?
Yeah, it's a tricky one versus that cover. I call it casino blitz. You know, they're all in. It's cover zero, man across the board. You're trying to read two things at once with a free rusher coming. And I actually thought he made the right decision, and he flattened him out on the corner. I thought Julian Edelman actually could have bodied up more and shielded the defender from making a play. But
yeah, made him kind of made him go through him. Is that what you're talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like almost stop, make him go through him, and then go after the ball. And if you fall down, then you'll get the call.
Exactly. And I think he lost track. I think Julian thought he beat him so bad off the break that when Tom flattened him a little bit on the throw, he just kind of lost where the defender was at. And it was a really good play by the defender, too. But it's one of those that if he throws it underneath and tries to jam it in, then it's like, oh, look at Julian Edelman winning on the corner rounds. Those are really hard ones. That's not like a zone coverage where you're high-lowing a guy. I mean, that is literally processing that information in a split second, knowing you have a free rusher, somebody unaccounted for coming from somewhere. So I actually thought that was the right decision.
Okay, what about the Patriots' offensive ineptitude in general, though? Look, they were almost good enough to almost come back and tie or win that game. Are they going to have enough in January to get to the Super Bowl?
I mean, for the first time in a long time, it's hard to see that they do. They kind of seem like an almost offense. They almost get it done. They almost look good at times. They almost can run the ball. They almost finished drives. One of the worst red zone teams in football. I can't remember the last time I said that about a Tom Brady-led offense. So they're kind of an almost offense. And I think that would be okay if the defense was still locked down and dominant. But we've had two straight weeks now where the defense has showed some vulnerability. Not horrible yesterday by any stretch of the imagination, but giving up big plays. And you just can't. When you're trying to win with mediocre at best offense, you have to have spectacular defense and special teams. Just good or really good isn't enough in this modern-day football. So as I look at it, now there's always that back of your head where you're like, well, they're going to get better. They're going to get better. One of these young receivers is going to come on. They're going to use White more out of the backfield. You know, like there's something coming, but now this is quite a stretch where that offense has been brutal, so it's really hard to forecast them putting it together for a playoff run.
Okay, so is there any fix, right? Like, I mean, is there a fix for it?
Well, you know, they had to, you know, high potent receivers in the building, Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. Now, I think I agree with why they let them both go, but that was their plan. So they went in with the expectation that that was going to work. It didn't. They drafted Henry at Arizona State. We've seen that it's hard for young receivers to grasp this offense and be highly productive. No, I don't think there's a fix anytime soon. Maybe there's an off-season fix, but I don't see an in-season fix. Running the ball. I mean, if they're going to fix it, yep, it's going to be running the football and action passing off of it, and then getting a lead, getting a 17-6 lead, and then letting the defense be great. That's the fix, but that's easier said than done. Running the football without a dynamic passing game in the NFL is really difficult. It's also very difficult without an inline dominant tight end blocker. So that's the thing we never talk enough about, is when teams need to run the football, usually point to the tight end.
Right.
And that guy is a sixth offensive lineman as well as a threat in the passing game, and they don't have that.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because Niners fans got super mad at me. Because they've seen video of George Kittle blocking, and they're like, and I said, like, look, he's a great athlete who blocks, but he's not the best. And you tell me if I'm wrong, but this is what GMs have told me. Like, look, the best blocking tight ends in the league, you've never heard their names. You don't know, unless they're on your team, you don't know they exist. The difference is that Rob Gronkowski was what those guys are as a pass catcher, and then what the elite level blockers were as a blocker. Is that a fair?
Is that fair?
Okay.
It's very fair. I do think the fan needs to know, too, there's different types of tight end block. Like, Gronk was so special because he was a knockback in line blocker. I mean, he could knock back a big old outside backer. He could knock back a defensive end. He could double team and, you know, tray block up to an inside guy. He could eliminate safeties and soft backers and then be a dominant pass catcher. There's also tight end Shannon Sharp was mine, who at the end of his career was not a great blocker, but he knew how to block in the zone game.
Right.
He knew how to get in the way of people. He understood blocking schemes, so he could what I call shadow block, where you just get up in front of the guy. You're not knocking him back, but you're shadow. George is maybe one of the best at that. George is a good blocker.
Right.
He's just not a knockback blocker.
Right. He gets out. He's a great athlete, and he gets out and he gets on linebackers quickly, and he gets the right angle.
Exactly. Exactly, and it's just two different ways. But that's why Gronk will go down, arguably, as one of the greatest tight ends that's ever played the game, because of his ability as an inline blocker to knock you back.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Trent Dilfer. What did we learn about the Ravens and their ability to hold off the Bills on the road yesterday?
I just think it's spectacular how they can play this style of football. They have not been overly productive on offense, but they've been awesome in critical moments. They've made plays. They get it done when it's ugly, and you know it's one of those plays. And I don't know how to describe this other way than you're watching the game, and everybody knows it's the most important play of the game. Like, I don't know why it's the most important play of the game, but you just know. You're sitting with a bunch of friends, like, okay, this is going to be the play, and they make it. They make it, especially with Lamar Jackson, but they're making it on defense, too. Or they make it on special teams. They're just one of those teams that has their best moments when they're most critical. I think that has a lot to do with their belief in their quarterback. I think it has a lot to do with the belief in who they are, their identity, offensively, defensively, and special teams. But winning these last two games against two dominant defenses has been really, really impressive.
What about Josh Allen? You've told us before, hey, you talk about other quarterbacks, you know, it's a big third and six, right?
And yep, exactly.
Now look, he had a penalty that kept that drive alive on fourth down, but there was a third and four on his last drive and a third and eight. And I believe he was sacked and threw another one away. I don't know if it's a misread of coverage, but is that kind of what you're talking about with Josh Allen? Like, look, they've taught him to pick up, you know, half the field, read it, if not, run the football. That has a ceiling, though, and maybe did we see the ceiling yesterday?
In his development, again, I'm bullish on Josh Allen because of how fast he's growing up. I mean, I did not expect him to develop this quickly, and he's really developed quickly. But, yeah, there's still gaps. There's still those boundary-to-boundary reads in the situations you're talking about that he needs to grow more in. But to say, I mean, he's a kid that's gone from a project to he's a really high-ceiling prospect. He's played a lot of good football this year. There are gaps and things he needs to get better at, and I think he'll identify those. But he's showing that he can grow rapidly. But, yeah, if you're talking about the Bills this year for a Super Bowl contender, I think they have the defense. I think they have the makeup for it. But I do believe that will be their Achilles heel, is they're still too early in Josh's development for him to make that type of play to carry you through.
Trent Dilfer, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can follow Lipscomb Academy on social media at LA Mustang FB, only high school program in the country with a full-time nutritionist, NFL-caliber strength coach, best high school weight room in the country, barbershop, 3,000-square-foot concert venue, coaching staff with 30-plus years of NFL playing experience, and 85 years of college playing and coaching experience. Trent Dilfer, their head coach, and he joins us on Fox Sports Radio. How big was that win for the Niners? Not just in the win, but the way in which they won the game.
Massive. I just think the whole week, you know, to go to Baltimore and play in those brutal conditions, to have what I would call an impressive loss, then to stay in Florida, you're not with your family, you're fatigued, you just come off an emotional roller coaster, then you got to travel to New Orleans, one of the hardest places to play. You're obviously a shell of yourself physically, evident by how the defense played. And you just, you know, you get in a shootout, which hasn't been the Niners' M.O., and they show another dimension to them that, you know, their fastball all of a sudden went from 95 to 83 yesterday, meaning their defense, and yet their offense picks it up and can win a shootout. And then they do it in a one-minute end-of-the-game drive. They just showed so much grit and so many dimensions with their offense showing up. Run, pass, special plays. I think they're the best team in football right now. When I look at them, because of their dimensions, because of how they've been kind of hardened by this little run here. Now, this could change, but if you were to do, I don't do power rankings. If I were to do a power rankings, I'd put them number one.
Trent Dilfer joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, what about the Seahawks? We see what the Seahawks look like when Russell Wilson doesn't play well. Is this just a team too overly dependent on Russell Wilson to bail them out?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not down on them after last night. They kind of ran into a buzzsaw. They kind of got schemed a little bit. They are temperamental in their offensive line play still in the run game. So I think you can make the argument they depend maybe too much on Russell's magic to, we're not running it great tonight, he'll save us type mentality. But they also kind of have a cool formula. Like, when they're playing well, it's a great formula, right? You run the football, high volume, your quarterback's magical, makes big plays in the passing game, they're a vertical pass team, they're always going to play good defense, they're always going to be good on teams. To me, it was one of those losses where it's like, I really don't think any different of you. I think more of the Rams. The Seahawks are going to make some noise here. I mean, the NFC is going to be really interesting to follow with the Niners and the Seahawks playing Week 17. I think that's going to be one must-see TV.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it all depends on the seedings and how much the seedings are set, don't you? Because otherwise, will the Niners shut some of that down? That's my kind of only question. If you were the Browns, what would you do with Odell Beckham Jr.?
Man, I hate the player politicking with other coaches and other players that's been rumored that's happening. I've seen it happen with teammates. It's a bad deal in the locker room. It plays really bad in the locker room, as you can imagine. I'd probably sit them down and say, you're either all in or you out. There can't be any halfway. It can't just be about you. What's made Belichick so incredibly successful, one of the things is that it's team above self. There's no individual that's more important than the next, and I think Odell doesn't come from that mindset, and if the Browns are going to turn this thing around in the future, they need more guys that buy into that philosophy. So if he's truly doing what's being reported that he's doing, that he's doing the post-game politics, as we called it, I'd let him go, because as you can see, the NFL is not always about Willies and Joes and about the sizzle. It has to be about fit, chemistry, all those different things. And obviously, this hasn't been the best fit. You haven't heard Landry complaining. Landry's been more productive than Odell Beckham Jr. So at some point, it becomes about the team, not about you.
Last thing, the Chiefs, is the run game so weak that it will keep them from winning a Super Bowl?
Yeah, the lack of knockback, I think, on both sides of the ball. They lack that physical edge up front on both sides of the ball. Now, they have the potential of it defensively. It just doesn't always show up. Offensively, they're more of a sideline-to-sideline type run game. And without that downhill physicality knockback, I really think it's going to be their limiting factor, because you can't smoke and mirror and just put it on a gunslinger all the time. Ask Dan Marino. I mean, literally, if people are looking for a history lesson, just go back to the Miami Dolphins, Dan Marino. There was nobody better. There's nobody that could carve you up more. There's nobody that made your jaw drop every week more than Dan Marino in that passing game to the Smurf. To those receivers. And it's deja vu watching the Kansas City Chiefs.
TD, Trent Dilfer. Trent, thanks so much for joining us. Have yourself a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, buddy.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Look, I'm almost resigned to the idea that Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP. Like, resigned to it. I don't think anybody, if they looked you in the eye, go like, is Lamar Jackson the best quarterback in the NFL? Like, no. Is he even having the best season as a quarterback in the NFL? Like, no, not really. Right? Like, it's not crazy to say that. It's not blasphemy to say that. He's different. He's unique. But if we, like, what are we going by? We going by QBR? He's actually the top rated in terms of QBR quarterback in the league. Does have 28 touchdowns and only 6 interceptions. It's not, that's not even counting his ability to run the football. He's completing 66% of his passes, which is far higher than he did last year. And he's proving a lot of the doubters wrong. I will point out that Pat Mahomes' team did go into New England and get a win. Like Lamar Jackson, their big win, they beat New England. So did Pat Mahomes. He's got 21 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Now, if you want to go based upon stats and touchdowns, Lamar's right there. Right there. But he's not, you know, we're going based upon wins. Obviously, they're doing well. Look, he's going to win it. We've totally forgotten the fact Aaron Rodgers' team has only 3 losses on the year. He's thrown 23 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions in a new offense. And if you want to tell me that Lamar Jackson's a better quarterback, go ahead. Have fun on that island. He ain't. Doesn't matter. He's not. But Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP because his team is playing great football. They're finding a way now, even when they're not prolific offensively. They get a lead, but not getting huge leads and holding on for wins. There's a value in that. Lamar Jackson is valuable because he has energized this team and because he has won games and because he has played well. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's not valuable. But I don't believe he's the most valuable player in the league, even if he's going to win it. Russell Wilson is the most valuable player in the league. Right? Like Russell Wilson, 26 touchdowns. Now he has 5 interceptions. He did not play great last night. I would actually tell you, I thought he played kind of poorly last night. And when he doesn't get it going, they're not a very good football team. Fair? Okay. When Lamar doesn't get it going, they still have a great defense, still have a great kicking game. Still have a big-time running game. When Russell Wilson doesn't get it going, they just stink. He's the most valuable player. And I don't think Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the NFL. Again, I think Aaron Rodgers is still better. By the way, Drew Brees showed himself to still have some stuff. But in terms of value, what you bring to a team, how important your success parallels the team's success, you can't go wrong with Russell. Lamar Jackson will win the MVP. Why? Because we've all bought into the narrative and because there is some reality to it and his team continues to win. He's not having the best season. He's not the best quarterback. And he's also not the most valuable. That's Russell Wilson. He's having a really good season. He's really valuable. His team's playing great. And all of these things combined with the narrative of everybody thought Lamar Jackson was going to stink or going to play wide receiver, which is like one scout asked him to run routes as a wide receiver. Which, by the way, he ended up lining up as a wide receiver last year with the Ravens. You guys remember that? I'm sorry, he wasn't a wide receiver. He was a quarterback who was lined up out wide next to other wide receivers, but not as a wide receiver because that would be offensive.